This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Today we continue our look at the African-American literary imagination with a trip into uncharted territory. I'm talking about the outer limits of genre writing, science fiction, fantasy, horror, and more. There's a small but growing fan base for what some call speculative fiction. Few have ever broken out of these genres and into the mainstream. Among those who have, Octavia Butler. When she died early last year, she was among the best-known contemporary science fiction writer, black or otherwise. But she told NPR's Terry Gross in 1993 that her race didn't factor into her book sales until she started writing about it.
When I got into science fiction, I sold my first three books without an agent. And with no particular connections, I just mailed them in over the transom. So nobody knew who I was. And nobody knew I was black. And no, apparently there wasn't any worrying. I didn't have any difficulty selling my first three novels. When I wrote Kindred, which is unmistakably of special interest to black people, I had a lot of trouble. All of a sudden, 15 publishers couldn't find a place for it. They just had no idea how to sell it as what it was.
Kindred is a novel set in 1976 about a woman who is transported back to the days of American slavery. She meets her ancestors, black and white. Kindred was first published as trade fiction, not science fiction. Today it's a classic and remains Octavia Butler's most popular book. For more now on the ups and downs of being a black writer of speculative fiction, we've got science fiction writer Stephen Barnes, author of Zulu Heart, Lion's Blood, and Fire Dance, also Tananarive Due. Her books include My Soul to Keep, The Living Blood, and The Good House, and Cherie R. Thomas. She's editor of Dark Matter, an award-winning compilation of speculative fiction. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
I have to say I'm a big fan of this genre. And so let me start with you, Tananarive. Octavia Butler described the moment when she decided to be a science fiction writer. She was 12 years old, watching a B-movie on TV. It was called Devil Girl from Mars. And she was convinced that she could write a better story. What was your awakening moment?
I grew up watching the classic black and white horror movies, The Mummy, Dracula, that kind of thing. I don't think I ever imagined myself as a horror writer or a speculative fiction writer at that time, but I was definitely drawn to that type of writing from a very young age.
All right, Stephen, what about you?
Well, I've been reading and writing adventure stories for much of my, childhood. I think that there was a very specific point where I started feeling that there was a voice missing that I might be able to fill in when I would read, Tarzan or Conan or whatever, and there would be racist overtones in there that hurt. But I read them anyway because I really wanted to immerse myself in this sort of fantastic adventure.
You know, there are a lot of writers. We just had another discussion in the literary series, and there are a lot of writers who may have these incidental bits of racism or racial controversy. I remember reading Stephen King's The Stand, and there's a scene where these black men are executing white people in this very kind of carnival-like atmosphere. It seemed out of place. Sharia, do you think that this motivates a lot of African-American writers?
Well, I think it... In terms of writers, it does motivate them. You want to read work that reflects yourself, not necessarily literally yourself, but your perspective, your point of view, and the community around you. And if you don't see it in the work in front of you, as a writer, you're challenged to write it yourself. You want to put that word on the page.
So what is speculative fiction? It's a term that maybe not a lot of people know.
It's a broad umbrella term. I believe it was first introduced in the 30s by Robert Heinlein as an umbrella term to talk about work that wasn't necessarily looking at technology or looking at, the hard sciences, but looking at how communities and people would change over time. So speculative fiction was more about social changes. And later, I used it after Samuel Delaney and Marilyn Hacker edited a volume called Quirk, and they used the term speculative fiction. And they used it as a broad umbrella term to not only include what we normally think of as science fiction and fantasy, but to also include magical realist works and maybe works that are retellings of folktales and things like that. So just numismatic literature, it's a big term for a lot of work, including horror.
Tanana Reeve, how would you describe your books? Would you describe them as horror? What genre do you think?
I've always been fleeing categories. Harlan Ellison once gave me the advice not to have myself categorized as any particular type of writer, but categories are a fact of life. And I write supernatural suspense. That is what I'm primarily known for, although I have written short stories that might be considered science fiction because they have a thimble full of science. And then it's an extrapolation about, okay, how would this impact an individual in this society or a child in the society? But most of what I write definitely is supernatural suspense.
And Stephen, when you one other cut on why African Americans write speculative fiction that I've heard discussed is because we want to live to a certain degree in a sense of hope for an alternative reality. Obviously, not all science fiction is positive in terms of the way that the future is envisioned. But do you think that there's an urge for people who may have critiques of modern day society to look for alternatives in the future?
Well, I think that the drive of the artist of any kind is to express something that they feel inside themselves and externalize it so that others can feel, know, and react to what they see. I think that African Americans might have a little bit special push there, but the truth is that every individual human being feels that sense of disconnect with the society outside themselves. Blacks as a group have a disconnect. Gays as a group have a disconnect. You know, blind people as a group have a disconnect. So anytime there's a cultural edge and you feel my perspective, the way I see this, is not being presented, or it's being presented inaccurately, or it's being presented viciously, it's being presented in such a way as it creates a derogatory context, and I feel the pain and my children feel that pain, then you do that. It's part of the artistic urge.
Cherie, tell us about Dark Matter, because that was one of these landmark anthologies. Did you ever talk to the writers about why they wrote what they wrote?
Yes, I had many fun conversations with writers from all over the country and a few other places about how they got involved in the field, how they got interested. And many of them said it was, you know, from childhood, you know, listening to elders in their families who told stories and really just sparked their imagination. It inspired them to write and to look for work of their own. Also, it seems to be part of the environment. If you are a part of a culture, for example, if you may be Caribbean, and there are tales, legendary tales about duppies and all kinds of amazing animals and lugaroos from Haiti or what have you, you know, it's part of the atmosphere. And then also, some of them were just interested in the sciences in general. I mean, that was just the thing that they were very curious about. They wanted to know how the world worked, and, you know, science is a great way to put order to what might be chaotic around you. And so they began to apply that to their writing.
Cherie, and I'm going to ask all of you this, name your favorite work of speculative fiction. Tell us very briefly what it's about and why you like it.
You've got to be kidding.
our own work, someone else's work.
Anyone's work. Hey, Stephen, why don't you go first, since Cherie obviously has a long list she's going to have to pick from.
2001, A Space Odyssey. I think it was the result of two extraordinary geniuses collaborating in a moment of time where the audience was ready for something new. It's virtually nonpareil.
And Cherie, I am sure I'm a book lover too, so you have a long list, but pick one.
Oh, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say... one of my all-time favorites that stuck in my head would be Moving Mars by Greg Bear, which, you know, it just really moved me. It was a very amazing book, and I don't want to ruin it for everyone. Go find Moving Mars.
Okay. Tanana Reeve?
Oh, this is such a hard question. I'm so torn. I'm going to go ahead, because I'm feeling sentimental, especially listening to Octavia's voice, and say Parable of the Sower, which there are so many other books, but that book is such a journey that it actually makes you stronger as the reader as you go on.
I had someone describe the Parable series once as something that made them very nervous, but that they couldn't put down.
Exactly.
And so I want to reintroduce the topic and the folks. You're listening to NPR's News and Notes, and I'm Farai Chidea. We're talking about African Americans writing speculative fiction, science fiction, fantasy, horror. We have just been talking to Tanana Reeve Du. Her books include My Soul to Keep, The Living Blood, and The Good House. We've also got Stephen Barnes, author of Zulu Heart, Lion's Blood, and Fire Dance, and Cherie R. Thomas, editor of Dark Matter, an award-winning compilation of speculative fiction. Let's move a little bit from the writers to the audience. Tanana Reeve, your books have really crossed a lot of audiences. Who do you think is your audience?
In the very beginning, my audience was almost exclusively African-American women, I would say. That was how I was marketed, sort of on the heels of Terry McMillan. Oh, black people will buy commercial fiction. There was a lot of excitement in publishing about that. I've attracted horror readers over time. Steve and I just wrote a mystery, so we're attracting mystery writers now. But I will say this, it's interesting, even though there is an attraction to the supernatural because of what people have in their own backgrounds culturally, I think there's also been a reticence on the part of some black readers to open my books because of the sense, either because of religious reasons or stories their grandmother told them, that somehow they're inviting an evil into their world. So I hear from book clubs that they have to fight sometimes to get my books on the list.
That's interesting. Stephen, what about you? And you know, bouncing off of what Tanana Reeve says, are there barriers to broadening your audience?
I would say so. I mean, I think that the typical reader of one of my books is a science fiction reader who enjoys social speculation or anthropological speculation, or enjoys a certain amount of suspense and action. I think that there are problems with broadening it out to the broadest conceivable audience that I would not have faced had I been white. Because I think that science fiction is and fantasy are very much the mythology of the 20th and 21st century. And the central mythology of any group of people is God created us first and loves us best. So science fiction is absolutely 99.9% white people and their imaginary friends. You know, that's, they don't believe that about themselves. They don't believe that they're heir to the same perceptual problems that the rest of the human race has, but they do. And so if you put a non-white person on the cover of the book, you'll hurt the sales.
That's really interesting. And before we move on to Cherie, I'm thinking as you talked of Ursula Le Guin, who broke a lot of boundaries with women's issues in the same way that you're talking about breaking boundaries with African-American issues. She found a great audience. Do you think over time that African-American speculative fiction writers will find, you know, ways to broaden non-black audiences?
Well, it's already happening, but it'll never be as popular. I mean, you know, Ursula Le Guin, one thing, all she had to do was to reach out to women who were 51% of the population. You know, so just numerically, she had a gigantic advantage. But I know that as time goes on, the aversion factor, the sense of the other, the sense of guilt based on things that happened in the past, all of those things combining with the natural human tendency towards just considering your group to be more beautiful and wonderful and intelligent than whatever the other group is. And these barriers take time and it takes education. You know, hope springs eternal.
Cherie, when you think about the audience, Dark Matter is, I think, very well known in African-American speculative fiction circles. How has it had a ripple effect in, say, science fiction circles, African-American reading circles? Where else has it gone?
Well, it's definitely been a part of the book clubs. They really reached out. And I totally agree with Tanana Reeve about the struggles they might have had to have the book on their list, because there is this streak of conservatism that we have in our community, maybe not more so than any other community, but we're more conscious of it, I guess, since we're so small compared to the rest of the country. And definitely the science fiction community has embraced it. In fact, they gave it two of their higher awards, two World Fantasy Awards. There's actually two volumes of Dark Matter. So I feel like, yes, as a part of that community, my challenge is to just get it into the rest of the world, the rest of the community that are reading, who normally would not pick up science fiction at all, no matter who's on the cover. They feel like it has no relevance to daily life, or that it's mostly just space operas and laser guns and has absolutely nothing to do with, genetically modified food that we're eating, or the environment, or, you know, environmental racism, for example, how that might impact communities, all kinds of things that really do affect us on a daily basis. It's in that work. And the thing that really kind of tickles me is, you know, I'll see people get so excited about a blockbuster film. You know, they'll break their neck to go to the movies to go see a Matrix or something, you know, and not realizing that a lot of the ideals, a lot of sensibilities had already been explored in science fiction on the page decades ago. You know, we're just now getting the technology to show it, but we certainly have the imagination to write it. So that's always a challenge. Science fiction is for you. It is relevant. It is engaging, and we are part of that discussion.
Tananarive, I think about Star Trek, which fits into this broad genre of TV pop science fiction, and the fact that it had the first interracial kiss. Science fiction sometimes breaks these boundaries of expectation. Do you think that it has social relevance?
Oh, absolutely. Octavia comes to mind. I mean, when you think of a book like Parable of the Sower, it's a near future environment where you can see it's sort of that scenario. If this goes on, this is how society will go. I'm working on a book right now, a second sequel to my book, My Soul to Keep, which is set in the near future. And it's looking at what happens if there's no health care, what happens if war goes on unabated, what happens if this happens. So hopefully you can take a science fictional element, a futuristic element, or a fantasy element to hold up a mirror to our society and show readers, listen, you need to have a voice, you need to be active, because this is where we could be headed.
Stephen, what are you working on right now?
I'm working on the sequel to a novel set 30,000 years ago in East Africa. It's called Shadow Valley. Also, we're getting ready to do the second book, the second Tennyson Hardwick mystery novel.
And Cherie, are you continuing to look at gathering together African-American speculative fiction? I just met, for example, a filmmaker who's doing a doc on Black speculative fiction writers, and just briefly.
Yes, I'm editing a third volume of Dark Matter on Africa.
Wow, it sounds absolutely fascinating. Well, I want to thank all of you and wish you the best in your writing adventures.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cherie R. Thomas is the editor of Dark Matter, an award-winning compilation of speculative fiction. She spoke with us from NPR's New York studios. And from NPR West, sitting right here with me, we had Stephen Barnes. His books include Zulu Heart, Lion's Blood, and Fire Dance. Also, Tananarive Due, author of My Soul to Keep, The Living Blood, and The Good House.